What's going on, everyone? Welcome to a brand new episode of Show Me the Crypto. On this episode, live on location at the Blockchain Futurist Conference, we talk to Brandon De Silva and Wei Xia of AI Arena. It was a great conversation. Ulf, what were some of your takeaways?
Man, these guys are building a game on the blockchain that all revolves around training AI models to then compete against each other in this platform brawler game. And it's super interesting. It was hard for me to initially wrap my head around just how the game even works, but digging into it and learning more about their approach and the whys behind why they created the game, and even just they were telling us about how some people that are used to fighting games maybe didn't expect to love this style, like this take on a game where you're training the AI to then fight, but that they got surprising reactions and everybody loved it. So it was really interesting to talk to these guys, and yeah. What about you?
Yeah, it was a great conversation, and like Ulf said, initially we were thinking, is this game actually going to be fun? But they really dove into the use case and who might be interested in this type of game. Also, we got into all sorts of other things, talked about why the future of Ethereum is very bullish. We know you're going to love this episode.
Show me the crypto. Show me the crypto. Show me the crypto.
In a world on the brink of disruption, two men will bring you clarity by interviewing some of the most intelligent and influential names in the blockchain world. Welcome to Show Me the Crypto with your hosts, Wade Patterson and Ulf Lonnegren.
Well, hey everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of Show Me the Crypto. We are live on location at the Blockchain Futurist Conference with Brandon De Silva and Wei Xia of AI Arena. Gents, welcome to Show Me the Crypto.
Thanks for having us.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, stoked to have you both on. And so Brandon, I'm going to start with you. Can you tell us a little bit? We're on day two of the conference. How's the conference been so far for you?
Honestly, I'm loving the conference so far. A lot of great booths. Some people we already know, some people we work with here. It's just great to see everyone kind of showing out, showing what Web3 can offer.
Awesome. And then Wei, next question for you. Similar, what's been a highlight of the conference so far for you?
I think just seeing the vibrant ecosystem that Canada has when it comes to Web3, super exciting. I think we punch above our weight in a lot of ways. So it's good to get people congregated in one place and really sharing that enthusiasm and energy for a space that we all believe in and want to continue to push forward. So that's been really exciting.
Love it. We're going to get into everything AI Arena, and we're going to talk about the intersection of Web3 and gaming. But before we jump too far into that, I just wanted to know a little bit about your guys' story in regards to, like, how did you get into both crypto? How did you discover it and get into it? And then, at what point did you decide to take gaming, which presumably is some level of passion for you guys, and work it into Web3? So Brandon, maybe we can start with you.
Sure. I'm sure Wei can add to this. He actually got me into crypto way back in the day. Essentially, we used to work at an asset management firm, and Wei led the digital strategies for that firm in terms of investing, or at least exploring investing in digital assets. And I was kind of his right-hand man for anything tech-related. So he got me to research a lot of stuff in terms of like blockchain, Web3. And then I'm sure like you guys know, as soon as you really go down the rabbit hole, it's hard to come back, you know? And so we started really investigating the tech, understanding the tech. We coded up our own blockchains to really understand what's going on. And we kind of fell in love from there, you know?
Yeah.
Wei, same question for you.
Yeah, I guess I'll add a little bit to that story. So I think this was like 2019. Was it?
Or at 20? That specific time.
Yeah. So late 2019, I think we were just past like DeFi summer, and it was like leading into the bull market at 2020, and then NFT started to become this thing, and it was kind of new at that moment in time. And, you know, I told Brandon, I'm like, hey, we got to start looking into NFTs, and he's like, okay. He goes and does all his work, and he literally comes into my office one day, and he's like, hey, man, you know we can like tokenize AI models now. And I'm like, what are you talking about, right? And he's like, this NFT thing is actually way more powerful as a core primitive than what a lot of projects are currently doing, which was like using it more as like a, you know, like a social kind of flex, let's call it, that whole PFP meta that, quite honestly, we're still pretty much entrenched in today, right? But even then, we saw the opportunity for NFT to unlock basically the ability for you to kind of directly exchange and transfer intellectual property and value for assets that historically never had the opportunity to be directly monetized, right? So from our perspective and from Brandon's background, he's an AI engineer. He immediately saw that opportunity. He pitched me on the idea of AI Arena. I was lost for a little bit, but we pushed through and pursued it and started building the MVP, and the rest, as they say, is history.
You know, it's interesting when we talk about Web3 and gaming, because it seems like you just nailed so many reasons why this makes sense to be the future. So many people would agree, like, you know, you use various game examples of you're getting these assets in game. Wouldn't it be nice if you owned those pieces? But yet, it seems like it's taking longer than many people thought for that to hit mass adoption. What do you guys see in the sense of why Web3 gaming hasn't taken off as quick as maybe many people would think that it should have? Brandon?
That's a good question. I think people tend to have really strong priors in terms of, I believe this, and you are not going to change my mind, right? And so specifically with a lot of Web2 gamers, they saw a lot of things that were happening in crypto, which essentially were scams. And they put this umbrella on top of the whole industry to say everything that's coming out of Web3 is a scam, right? And this is the strong bias they have. And it takes a lot to really break them out of that. I think it'll take maybe one or two like really massive success stories to see the actual potential of what Web3 can bring to gaming. We're hoping to be one of those. But yeah, I think certainly most people have strong priors, and we're not like, we have strong priors too, you know what I mean? We certainly believe certain things, and it takes a lot of evidence to really like show us otherwise.
Yeah, I think in addition to that, I think Web3 and crypto, especially as a feature of the last bull cycle, we probably didn't do ourselves great favors in terms of really leaning into a lot of the speculative use cases of the blockchain technology and using that as almost as the backbone of what gaming is supposed to be on Web3, which I think misses the point entirely. I think in Web3 you can experiment with radically new game loops, radically different ideas and concepts that are structurally perhaps not, I don't want to say not possible, but very challenging to do in the traditional gaming space. And I think that's where Web3 gaming will likely take off. If you look at gaming as an ecosystem, as an industry, it's incredibly competitive, right? And the incumbents are massive organizations with unlimited budgets, right? And what you have in Web3 are many times small, scrappy firms, upstarts, but you have to play a different game. You have to compete on different dimensions. So I think what we're seeing now is there's still a very strong community of like builders that are still in the space iterating on that. And I think coming into the next cycle, like Brandon said, there's going to be probably more than a handful of very strong, successful franchises that are Web3 native in gaming.
I think that rolls perfectly into asking the question around what is AI Arena, because what you guys are doing with it is not a typical game. Like, it's not like you don't go buy an AI Arena type game for your Xbox or your PS5. It's very unique in the approach, even just the game mechanism. The AI is a big part of it. And so I'd love to, I mean, we touched a bit on the gaming part just now, but I'd love to learn more about the AI aspect and how, you know, the training of AI works into AI Arena. So for those, let's pretend we're talking to someone who has no idea what AI Arena is. Can you just explain how it works and what the game's all about?
Yeah, absolutely. And feel free to follow up if I miss anything. But basically, AI Arena is a player versus player platform fighting game. And for those who don't know, platform fighting game is like you have fighters that are on a platform and the intention is to knock them off the platform, right? So that's the type of game that we're building. Now, the core game mechanic is actually to train an AI to fight on your behalf. And the way you do this is by actually playing the game and showing it how to fight, right? So you yourself, you're playing the game, you're demonstrating techniques, combos in certain situations, and your AI is learning from you and learning how to fight like you. And the intent is basically to train the best possible fighter you can to compete against other fighters that other people are training from around the world.
Interesting. And so I guess just further to that, like, what would be different in that sense in being successful given that AI method versus just like being like a top online player beating all the opponents? Like, what's the difference of what would make somebody a skilled player in the first example? Like, what makes it unique with the AI side?
Yeah, I think the best analogy I can give is that in like a traditional platform fighting game, let's take the example of Super Smash Bros, right? Like, the player is directly controlling the character in the competition itself. So it's almost like in sports, you're the player on the court. In AI Arena, you're playing more of the role of a coach. It's behind the scenes, but it's not. You're not just telling an AI what to do, you're actually physically showing the AI what to do. So it's a very intimate training process. We've gamified that entire loop and made it very simple to kind of create those pretty powerful strategies and outcomes that your AIs can learn. In fact, some of the advanced AIs that have been trained by people, they're starting to converge on gameplay where if you just took a random person off the street and show them footage, they would be like, they wouldn't really know that it's an AI fighting another AI. They would think that it's just a very high-level Smash player playing like a platform fighting game. So that's the result that you can achieve in this engine, but the experience is one that's more akin to like a coach player experience. But given the integration that you have of kind of being there every step of the way in watching and influencing how your AI grows, we liken it to like a parent-child relationship because you become so emotionally invested in the character that you train. So that aspect of it is quite unique. We haven't seen anything out there like that on the market, whether it's Web 2 or Web 3. And we're really excited for more and more people to experience what that's like.
Yeah, it's super interesting. Like, I'm a gamer myself, and I've played all kinds of games. And I'm actually big into platform. I just call them brawlers, but I don't think that's what they're actually called. But like, I play Brawlhalla a lot. Like most days of my life, and looking at an AI arena, I mean, it looks very similar in nature. It looks like a fun game, but for someone who is used to like being the player, I was kind of like, and please, like, I don't mean this in a negative way, but for me, I'm like, what's the fun in training versus doing? But is it just that it's not meant for a player like me who maybe wants to be the person in control of the brawler? Is meant for maybe someone who's more into almost like a simulator type game where you are like I was thinking when you're explaining this, almost like there's a F1 game. It's there's the F1 racing game, and then there's like F1 Manager, I think it's called. And you're basically playing the role, like you said, of like the team manager, and you're making decisions that then the race is simulated, and then you hope your team wins based on the decisions you made. Obviously, that's not like a training AI, so there's not that aspect. But do you think is it more for that type of a player than this type of game?
Maybe I'll start, and then Brandon can definitely add his views. I think that's kind of certainly that feedback is something that we've heard from like the fighting community. A lot of people come to this game and they do have that initial visceral reaction. They're like, is this really for me? I would say of many of the people that came in skeptics, by the time that they're done trying out the game and playing it and kind of starting to master the game loop, they leave very intrigued and wanting to explore it more. Because, and we get this feedback, where I was like, I didn't anticipate that I would actually like this, but I can totally see why this is like addictive to play. I think that's one aspect of it. I think the other aspect of it is that you're absolutely right. I think the target audience of this game is well beyond just the traditional fighting game community, to players that do like things like strategy, whether it's like a simulation-based game or like a football manager or F1 manager. And then beyond that, we were talking about the modding community may really take on to a game like this. So we're very much in that discovery phase of like, okay, who are the actual players that will really vibe with this game? I don't know if we have a succinct answer for you right now, but it's definitely more broad than just like the fighting genre in isolation.
I know there's not much more I can add to that. I think you covered everything I was going to say. Maybe one thing I'd say is I think naturally people that are really good at fighting games will have a natural advantage of this. Yes. Because remember, you have to actually show your AI what to do, right? So if you can't string together like a few combos, it's like it's not going to learn it on its own, you know? So certainly it helps that you're good at this stuff. And one thing I'll add is there was like an unexpected like response that we got from users where they were actually like shocked how much they enjoyed it. Part of it's rooted in neuroscience, but basically not having control elicits a bigger emotional response actually when you're watching your thing like do its thing. One of our team members, his name's Michael, he always gives this example of like the parents of like Olympians, they're often more nervous than the Olympians performing. You know what I mean? And it's like you raise this kid his whole life and they're doing their thing and you're just like cheering them on the sidelines. And when I'm training my AI, that's certainly the reaction I give. Like I live stream sometimes and I react a bit too much. Like I need to tone it down, but yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about AI in general, because it's interesting. Like since last November, when ChatGPT was released, I mean, I feel like that's when the masses really started to understand the power of AI. But you guys were much more in advance of that. This was on your radar. What do you make of like the last year of just the increase in adoption with regard to artificial intelligence? Brandon, we'll start with you.
Sure. I do think it's great. So I've been doing machine learning since 2016. So it's great that it's starting to kind of like show up in the limelight. I think it's great. I think one thing that we have to be careful about is that there's a lot of negative sentiment around it because people, I think, are concerned about their jobs. You know what I mean? Where now you see ChatGPT coming up and some analysts are probably looking at that like, oh, damn, like it's doing what I do on a daily basis much more efficiently, a fraction of the cost. And so they're justifiably like concerned. I think, though, that this presents a huge opportunity for wanting to learn more about AI, right? I think it's important to embrace things that they're not going away, right? Like people are upset about it. It's not going to go away because you're upset about it. And so I personally think this is a great thing. It gives people an opportunity to level up their skills so long as you're open-minded and want to accept it.
Yeah, I think that's a great segue into maybe talking a little bit about kind of the underlying mission as to why we are so passionate about building AI Arena in the first place. And, you know, on the surface, it is a game. And if you look at the company, which is called ArenaX Labs, we're a tech company, but you can think of us as like a gaming studio, but we think of ourselves more as a AI tech company. The mission behind our company is we want to democratize AI, make it more approachable, accessible, easier to understand for everyone. And why is that important? For all the reasons that Brandon just articulated, it's because that AI is going to be basically integrated into the fabric of everything in our lives, right? The issue is the fear that kind of pervades the general population is you generally fear things that you don't understand. So our solution to that is let's use a game, which is basically an engagement apparatus. It replenishes motivation within people because people, once they get vested into a game, they self-perpetuate forward and they want to progress. So why don't we use that as a medium to Trojan horse the education about AI into it? Thereby, the positive externality of that is, yes, you're enjoying a radically new game that's compelling and interesting, but you're also starting to really internalize what AI actually is. Without having to ever crack open a textbook or, you know, go and take a course online or have you. We don't promise this to be like a, you know, a university level course on AI, but it's certainly a great tool to get you in the door and really start to build those fundamental building blocks of understanding what AI actually is. And we've seen that already in our community, and people within a matter of a couple of days are starting to internalize concepts. Even though they can't necessarily explain it in technical terms, they understand it.
So I'd love to know more about how this all ties into the blockchain, because, you know, we're talking about AI, we're talking about gaming, but you don't necessarily need either of those things to be tied to the blockchain. You did mention in the beginning some of the advantages of that, but speaking more to AI Arena and the game itself, you know, what ways does the game tie to the blockchain and why is that important?
Brandon, you want to start with like the couple of reasons why you wanted to tokenize AI in the first place?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's important to start because actually when we started building this, it was like it kind of needed to be on the blockchain for a few reasons. The first one was to give people an opportunity to make money with machine learning. And the reason why I feel so passionate about this is because I noticed that in the machine learning industry, a lot of people, like a lot of organizations, they rely very heavily on credentials when hiring, right? So if you don't have a certain degree from a certain university, you're not even getting your resume looked at, right? And I saw a lot of people that were actually excellent at applied machine learning. They were just got their resumes tossed to the side because they just didn't have certain credentials. And it always like threw me off. I was like, this guy's so good, right? Like, how are you not looking at him? And so that always kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And especially for me, because I didn't come from a traditional machine learning background, but I was lucky enough that this guy over here gave me an opportunity. You know what I mean? And so I would just love for people that are really good at machine learning to kind of make money doing what they love. And so the idea initially was that they can tokenize their machine learning algorithms, right? And if they're truly valuable, they can actually sell their algorithms to other people. And another thing is that we can run a competition where they can compete against other algorithms that other people are developing, and the top algorithms get paid out essentially, right? So that's kind of like how we were thinking about this. And obviously if you know like Web2 Rails, it's impossible to administer this type of competition globally, you know what I mean? You kind of have to use Web3 Rails. So those were some of the initial reasons why we wanted to build this. And the one thing that kind of was aligned with the first one about tokenizing AI and basically selling your algorithm is as the game has been developed, we realized that there's another really cool thing that we can do, and that people that aren't actually machine learning developers, they can still use these machine learning algorithms and accrue skill, right? So they can impart their skill into these NFTs, and these NFTs can get more and more valuable the more skill that they get at playing the game, right? And now we're just using the underlying like machine learning tech to make these things basically like learn how to do things, you know what I mean? So yeah, we call it like a digital representation of your skill in a game represented on the blockchain.
Very cool, very cool. Wei, any extra thoughts on that? Brandon covered a lot of ground there.
Yeah, maybe just to talk about like from a game perspective, the Web3 component serves a very specific purpose, and that is the Web3 game is specifically designed for, you can call it like professional level competitive players, because they're going to be playing a certain game where there's going to be high bounty kind of rewards for recurring tournaments, etc. And Web3 creates that natural financial services layer for us to power this global competition, because we want to feature the best from all around the world, right? So Web3 is very good for that. But the broader kind of distribution of the game does not have to be Web3. If we want to speak to the biggest cross-section of audiences out there, to have everyone set up a wallet just to play the game is unnecessary friction. So our core game, to get started, you just need like a Gmail account or a Discord ID, and you're authenticated, it runs in browser, and off you go and you can start playing the game. So we basically ring fence the Web3 component for a specific purpose for that specific cohort of players.
Brennan Wei, this has been an awesome conversation. Learned a lot about AI Arena. You're not off the hook yet. We ask every guest of Show Me the Crypto the same three questions. It's a segment we call You Had Me at Crypto. Ulf's going to ask you those questions.
All right, Wei, we'll start with you. We'll do this for both questions and then just go back and forth, all right? Okay, so the first question, who's your favorite person to follow in the crypto space?
Whoa. That is a really tough one. Favorite person to follow in crypto? I am drawing a blank because there's so many really big personalities in crypto. I'm gonna shout out one person I really respect. It's Hunter. He's within the Web3 gaming community. He does a lot of research. He's kind of like an analyst. super high quality research, really, really nuanced takes. He's been growing his followership in a bear like a champ. It's really impressive to see what he's built. Really respect everything that he puts out. So I try to engage with him as much as possible. Really like his stuff. So maybe not someone that's on everyone's radar, but if you're following like gaming, NFTs, definitely worth a follow.
I was gonna say Wei, but that's a bit of a cop out. So I'll say Jonah. He covers Web3 and gaming. I mostly really like following him. He has like really like spicy takes, and his comments with respect to other people it's very entertaining. And I like the guy.
Nice. All right, second question. What will the price of Bitcoin be 10 years from now?
Oh my goodness. I think any number I throw out there may be underestimating what it could be. So I think, look, you go back to its core use case as a store of value. The scarcity aspect of it, obviously the next halving is coming in a few months in 2024. Right now, like, Bitcoin has already achieved its status as a store of value asset. If more and more people migrate into the digital financial services realm, it's digital gold. More value and wealth is going to be kind of seeking refuge in these type of assets. So once the supply starts to diminish, you get that kind of natural supply squeeze, right? So in 10 years, either it's probably a bit binary, you know? And maybe there's like a catastrophic technological social attack vector that we can't see yet. But if it survives that, I think you're probably talking like 7 digits plus in 10 years. That's kind of my thesis.
Nice. Love it.
1.8 million.
There we go. 1.8. I like it. All right. And the third and final question. What is the most underrated project in all of crypto? And no AI arena, but anything else is welcome.
Wow. Okay. That's really, really tough. I'm going to give a cop-out answer. And I'm going to say ETH is still very much underappreciated. I think people are sleeping on ETH. First of all, for anyone who's like a newcomer to crypto, you don't have to ape into anything, okay? Just hold Ethereum and Bitcoin, and you'll outperform basically 99% of the people out there. Anything else you do is probably net negative to your wealth over time. Secondly, ETH, it to me, is basically digital sovereign money. I think we're probably migrating towards a world where, we're probably going to be talking about Ethereum as the default reserve asset of the world, as opposed to U.S. Treasuries in maybe like 5 to 10 years. So if that happens, ETH price has an order of magnitude to go up. ETH yield will come down and become the risk-free yield. And I don't know, is that a 10x, 100x from here? I don't really know, but I think the upside is tremendous. Now, at the same time, downside is actually very modest, in my opinion, especially given where we are in the cycle. So, I mean, just put all your wealth in ETH, you're gonna be, you know, doing pretty well for your crypto portfolio. Not everything, but like, this is not financial advice, but that's my personal view, yeah.
That was my answer. I can still say ETH. Yeah. Well, I'm like somewhat of an ETH maxi. Just because it's so hard to recreate the network effect. You know what I mean? Like, and I was one of those people that tried spreading my bets early on a lot of L1s, but over time I've more and more just concentrated on ETH. Again, this is not financial advice by any means, but it's just, I think ETH just has such like a head start. It would be really hard to overcome it, in my opinion.
Great answers. Gents, thank you so much both for being on this episode of Show Me the Crypto.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to Show Me the Crypto. Please make sure to subscribe as well as rate and review this podcast.